This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Mary Louise Kelly in Washington. Neil Conan is away. Once upon a time, boys became men the day they went off to war. That still holds for some. For others, the turning point was getting married or starting a family. But the old tests of manhood, that ability to provide for a spouse and children, and the feats of physical strength and courage, may not be as relevant in modern society. In her new book, Manning Up, author Kay Heimowitz argues that men no longer know what's expected of them. And she writes, that's why so many male 20-somethings are stuck in what she calls pre-adulthood, trading real responsibilities for another round of video games. So what does it mean to be a man these days? We want to hear from men in our audience. What milestone marked your transition to manhood? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. Our email address is talk@npr.org, and you can join the conversation at our website. Go to npr.org and click on Talk of the Nation. Kay Heimowitz joins us now from our bureau in New York. She's a senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute and the author of the new book, Manning Up. Welcome back to the program.
Thank you.
So explain to me what you mean by this term, pre-adulthood. What is it?
Well, pre-adulthood refers to the age after college. And by the way, the book is really about college-aged people, men and women. Mm-hmm. It's the age after college up until, let's say, the mid-30s. So we're talking about the 20s into the 30s. It varies by individual because there is so much variation in when people marry, because I really see that as the kind of stopping point for pre-adulthood. It is a totally new demographic phenomenon. There simply has never been this large a number, this large a percentage of single young people with a few family responsibilities and lots of entertainment out there. And that applies to both men and women. So I think, you know, this is something utterly new, at least starting in the 1990s. We began to see a lot of Hollywood displays of this pre-adulthood in shows like Sex and the City and Seinfeld and on in that vein.
Echoes in pop culture. Sure. Let me press you. You mentioned that you see marriage as the turning point for where boys turned into men. Is that correct? Is that for you what signals a man's entrance into adulthood?
Well, it is what has historically and cross-culturally has signaled the man, the entrance of into manhood. So, yes, in the lack, you know, if there's no alternative, which I don't really quite see what there would be, I would say yes, because, look, that idea that men were going to eventually be husbands and fathers really provided a kind of structure and orientation towards the future, an understanding of their role within the society at large. So I would say that, yes, I do associate marriage with manhood, with adulthood, not just with manhood, which is not to say, by the way, that there aren't people, single people who are not adults. I mean, you know, it's not to rule out adulthood for everybody else.
Well, I was going to say, I imagine you're getting a fair bit of pushback on that.
Sure.
Point, that it's a very socially conservative point of view, that a man has to grow up, get married, and have babies before he counts as a man.
Well, you know, society is kind of conservative. It has to worry about the next generation and to make sure that men are assigned to the rearing of the next generation. That's why every society has had marriage. So, yeah, we don't like to hear it, but I simply don't know of a successful society where men have not taken responsibility for the rearing of the next generation.
Are there other factors that come into play for you? I mean, as you say, there may be plenty of offended bachelors out there who've chosen a bachelor lifestyle or for whatever reason not followed a traditional path through society. Are there other factors that come into play now when we consider this idea of manhood in the 21st century?
Well, I think that that's really the problem. We don't really know what it means to man up anymore. We're in a society that has a lot of confusion about what men are good for, what they're needed for. On the one hand, we make fun of them for being overly confident or aggressive. On the other hand, we make fun of them for being incompetent and foolish. You can think of Homer Simpson and other television
Ray Romano
characters.
Like
Ray
is
Romano,
coming floating
exactly.
into my mind.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. We tell men how important fathers are, and we also sing the praises of strong single mothers. So I think that the message that men are getting is they're sort of optional to family life. And I think when you tell a whole generation of men that, you know, we can take them or leave them, I think that you're going to get a rebellion on their part and a stubborn kind of, well, what do I need this for? And I've gotten a lot of letters from young men who say, why would I ever want to get married? You know, it's all about pleasing women. I don't want to just adapt to their needs or their desires. Why should I get married? I think if you have large numbers of people saying that, large numbers of men, you've got a real problem. Now, I should say that nevertheless, most people do say they want to marry and have children. I mean, that's another thing that's left out of this kind of discussion. It always sounds like, oh, you're imposing marriage on people who, you know, it should be their own lifestyle decision. That's true. But even if we do that, we still find that the vast majority of people, young people, teenagers who are surveyed and younger adults, say that eventually they want to be married, want to have children, and place great importance on family life.
Let's take a call. This is Chris. Chris is on the line from Columbus, Ohio. You're on the air.
Hi there.
Hi.
I'm so glad that you guys are talking about this, because I'm actually in the middle of writing something and I touch on this subject. It seems to me that if a fella commits to the idea of commitment, that is, if not the turning point, at least a salient moment in his life with regard to at least acceding to the idea of manhood or becoming a man. Presently, I think the culture is one that fosters a kind of freedom and regards marriage as, you know, something that, hey, that's just going to tie you down, pal, whatever. And, you know, obviously there's big differences between now and, say, 60 years ago when we had shorter lifespans and so on. And there wasn't, it seems there wasn't as much to know in order to evince adulthood, okay? But now I think you have to know so much more. There's a greater body of knowledge you have to acquire in order to show people that you are an adult, even though this is an attitudinal discussion or a discussion of attitudes, not of one's body of knowledge, if you will.
Well, let's get specific. Chris, let me ask, was there a particular moment or a particular milestone for you as you were growing up where you suddenly realized, you know what, I'm a man now?
When I became committed to the idea of I want a family, and I have to do whatever it takes in order to put myself in a position to make that happen. And as I told the screener, by the way, thank you for taking my call. As I told the screener, I mean to distinguish this from having necessarily someone in mind. I mean, you know, somebody might. It's not that I was in a position where, oh, I want to marry her, and I think I'll ask her. It was no. It was more like, I want to marry her, and I have to make things such that this is what I can do.
All right. Thanks so much for that call, Chris. We appreciate it. And we do want to bring more male voices into this conversation. In the interest of that, let me bring in our other guest, sociologist Michael Kimmel. He joins us now from his home in New York, and he's going to stay with us for the rest of this conversation. Michael Kimmel's a professor at the State University of New York on the Stony Brook campus. He's written many books on men and masculinity, and his most recent is titled Guyland, The Perilous World Where Boys Become Men. Welcome, Michael Kimmel.
Thanks, Mary Lou. It's nice to be here.
Let me let you respond to the conversation so far. Do you agree with Kay Heimowitz that there is this new phase that we have not seen before of pre-adults, of boys waiting a little while before they decide it's time to become a man?
Oh, absolutely. I'm very glad that Kay agrees with me. In Guyland, I made a very, very similar argument that there is a new stage of development between adolescence and adulthood. I call it Guyland. It lasts from about late adolescence, 16, 17, on through the college years. And people, that is to say men and women, drift out of what I call Guyland by their late 20s. So people do actually eventually complete the five demographic transition points.
And what are those?
You get married, you finish your education, you get a job, you have a kid, and you move out of your family's house.
Not necessarily in that order.
No. And let me tell you, in 1950, most people did most of those, pretty much finished all of them by age 21 or so. My mom finished all five of those within 3 months. She graduated from college in May, got married in June, got pregnant with me, started her first teaching job in the New York City public schools that September, and moved out of her parents' house into her marital house, as did all of her friends. Well, one thing, and I think this is something that Chris, your caller, mentioned also, one of the major drivers of this new stage of development, and Kay's quite right, I found out in my research, I interviewed 400 young people between the ages of 16 to 26 for my book. And I found that one of the major drivers of this is simple demography. My students today at the university, if they're traditionally aged college students, they're going to live, if demographers are right, into their mid-90s. So they look at me and they say, no, wait, get married at age 20? I'm not so sure I want to be married to the same person for 76 years. Yet they have a point. This is permanent, this stage of development. It's not going away. Women, especially, are not going to wake up tomorrow morning, despite what some people would like, and say, oh, you know, we completely blew it. Let's get married at age 20, have our first baby at 21, and, oh, this voting thing is also a bit of a drag. They're not going to go back.
Okay, we're talking today about the milestones that turn guys into men. If you're a man, tell us about the moment that made you one. Give us a call, 800-989-8255. You can email us. We're at talk@npr.org. I'm Mary Louise Kelly, and we're talking on Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Mary Louise Kelly in Washington. Neil Conan is away. We're talking today about the new book, Manning Up, and the subject of what it means today to be a man. A few listeners are emailing us, and here's a sample of what we're hearing. One writes, "What fun is there in growing up? My toys have just gotten more expensive." That's from Craig Kearns in Ohio. Another listener writing us, this is Patrick writing from Cincinnati, Ohio. He writes, "I'm 19 years old and have withdrawn from college to help care for my mother, who has ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease. For me, manhood came the day I was told about her diagnosis. While my peers are worried about summer jobs and internships, I help my mother go to the bathroom. I think these family illnesses are a mark of adulthood and adult responsibilities for many other people my age dealing with the same issues." Thank you for that letter, Patrick in Cincinnati. And we are talking about whether you call it pre-adulthood or Guyland, what the path to becoming a man looks like now and how it may have changed over the generations. We'd love to hear from the men in our audience. What milestone marked your transition to manhood? Our phone number is 800-989-8255. You can email us. We're at talk@npr.org. And you can join the conversation at our website. Go to npr.org and click on Talk of the Nation. Our guests today are Kay Heimowitz. She's the author of Manning Up, How the Rise of Women Has Turned Men into Boys. Also speaking with Michael Kimmel. He's the author of Guyland, The Perilous World Where Boys Become Men. And we're going to kick off with a call. This is Josh calling from Minneapolis, Minnesota. Hi, Josh.
Hi. For me, debt totally plays a huge role in when manhood is sort of begun. I just finished
debt
college.
Does. Mm-hmm.
I just finished college, so now all of a sudden I'm having to start pay back my student loans, and the reality of my finances is finally here for me. I mean, the fact that now we have the option as young adults to live in this sort of debt fantasy land while we're in college, where most of our life is, you know, financed, and then that extends our childhood that much further, and then you know, and all of a sudden we're graduated, and now the reality hits us that, hey, like, you have to actually take care of things now.
Kay Heimowitz, let me let you respond to that. What role does debt or the economy more generally play in all of this? A lot of young men these days are looking for jobs. They maybe don't want to start a family until they have a secure one.
Well, the economy plays just an enormous role in the creation of pre-adulthood. I think it's not just that we're living longer. It's that it's much, much harder to find your way into your first good job. It's hard to get to then climb beyond that first good job. This is true for both men and women, by the way. I have a lot of material in the book on what's called the knowledge economy. The knowledge economy, which is generally jobs that require a lot of thinking and analyzing and calculating, means that you have to get an education, and often higher education. And that does sometimes mean debt, although not generally in the numbers that would require putting off adulthood for that long. However, the knowledge economy does. And in order to figure out where you fit into this economy, it is, and I'm not talking about the recession here, this trend that we're talking about here started far before the Great Recession. Surely recession is complicating it. But the point is that in this new economy, young people will take much, much longer to grow up. And that, of course, will have to delay marriage. Michael Kimmel's quite right. You can't marry at 20. There's no way. Where I would quibble a little bit is here. Although we're living a lot longer, we haven't conquered biology completely, and a lot of women find themselves single and 30 or 32 or 33. The men that they're meeting who are close to their age are looking at younger women, and they often find themselves bereft, shall we say, and disappointed with their hopes and expectations for family life. So there is this kind of gap between biology and pre-adulthood that we still haven't figured out how to negotiate.
Okay, Josh, thanks very much for that call. And we want to get another caller on the air. This is Freddie calling from Cape May, New Jersey. Hi, Freddie. Hello, Freddie. Can you hear us?
Hey, how you doing?
Hey there. Thanks for calling.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Please go ahead.
Well, I'd like to give a counter argument to, you know, I'm 25 years old. I'm a military officer, educated, own my own home, own my own car. And I like to give the argument of why do men necessarily have to grow up if they're content with where they are? You know, I've had steady relationships throughout my life. One recently saying, hey, why don't you settle down? Why don't you get married? And I give the argument of I am settled down. You know, I have a home. I pay my bills. I have a Roth IRA, traditional, I invest, I'm not a hindrance to society. And if I don't want to go out with my friends or necessarily sit down and play some video games, why does society need to dictate that for some reason I'm not a man? The guide them, I guess you could say, you know, I've been deployed to Iraq. I was down during Hurricane Katrina with the aftermath, recovering dead animals and dead bodies. So I would say that everyone's going into the space of being a man may be different. But why do we necessarily have to grow up? If we're content with the way that we are, if I don't want to have a family or what may be, why does it have to be society, whether the circumstances negated or not, to actually grow up, I guess you could say?
Okay, it's a fair question. This is a caller who's served his nation in the military. Why does he need to settle down in the traditional sense to be a man?
Well, he doesn't, and he's paid substantial dues for becoming an adult, and, you know, I totally respect that. However, I have to ask the question, what happens when you have, you know, more and more men asking this question? The fact is, most people, most women in particular, but men too, say they want to marry and have children. What happens, though, if you start getting more and more men saying, why shouldn't I just play around? Why shouldn't I just play the field? What do I need to settle down for? I mean, it's one thing to say, you know, that this one individual, it's fine. Of course it is fine. But on a social level, we have to ask, if you get more and more of these individuals saying that, what are we saying about our future?
Absolutely. And if I like that, I don't know, I haven't got a chance to read the story of the book yet, but, you know, the institution of marriage as far as towards guys with the way that, you know, child support and alimony is paid out, that there's really no benefit right now as far as just the contract terms of marriage for men. Do you think that's maybe shying them away from actually tying the knot as opposed to, you see, compared to 1960, there's just a lot more, I think they call it cohabitation between males and females, and that's more of a guide towards marriage as opposed to, you know, let's get married and try living together at first. You know, people are now living together and seeing, you know, hey, is this going to work? If not, we'll just go our separate ways. Do you see that maybe being, you know, analogous to the way that things are going today?
Yeah, well, I hear from a lot of men who are upset about the way that the divorce culture has worked out for them. I mean, they have seen uncles or fathers or brothers or friends who have been kicked out of the house, lost contact with their children, and lost a lot of money because of having gotten married. I should say, though, about cohabitation, that those relationships tend to be much, much more unstable. There's an awful lot of social science on this. And I think that people who are cohabiting are less likely to be together after, let's say, 10, 20 years than those who are married.
Okay.
Understandable. I appreciate you guys taking my point of view.
Freddie, thanks so much for your call. We appreciate it. We're going to take another one on the line from Brainerd, Minnesota. Patrick from Brainerd, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello, Patrick. Hi.
Yeah, hi. Well, I think it helps, at least in my case. I'm 73 years old. I've been married for a good part of that, over 50 years. And I grew up in a basically single parent household, dirt poor, with an alcoholic father. I cannot remember not having responsibility from the time I was 10 or 12 years old, working little part-time jobs in a grocery store and giving most of the money that I earned back to my mother, and married early, had children, graduated from college with three kids, taught school for over 30 years, and I just cannot remember not being a man, if whatever definition you want to put on it. But it sort of galls me to hear people whimpering about, I got to pay my bills, I got to do this, I owe college. Well, I went to college and had kids and did it all. So I just have a very low threshold for sympathy for those people.
Okay. Michael Kimmel, let me let you respond to that. Patrick mentioned he's 73. Is there a changing role or a changing view in society of manhood, what it takes to be a man, that's changed over the generations?
Well, let me pose a rhetorical question in response to that and then try to answer it. Both Kay and I agree that there is a new stage of development and that this is driven by, we said, demography, changes in the economy. Many young men are, as earlier callers have suggested, are structurally prevented from developing the kinds of economic security that they feel they need in order to take the next step into adulthood. Some are precluded from doing that by racial discrimination, some by, you know, sort of the changes in the economy. I think Kay's quite right. Now, this is true for both women and for men. So why is it that both Kay and I wrote books about why men are adrift and women are not? Now, let me try to answer that question or suggest how we might answer it. That over the past 30 or 40 years, the definition of what it means to be a woman has changed fundamentally. When I ask my young women students these days, what does it mean to be a woman, they basically say, anything I want. And the difference is that the world has completely changed for men, and yet young men today still subscribe to an ideology of masculinity that they inherited from their fathers and grandfathers. That is to say, it remains relatively the same. And that difference is really a difference between why women are not adrift. My female students, you know, pretty much can tell you how old they'll be when they have their first kid. They have their whole life planned, and yet the men are saying, I don't know, it's all good. Now, it may be all good, and we don't want to, you know, take away fun and pleasure, but what we've done in our society is we have made adulthood synonymous with responsibility and sobriety, and we have made adolescence or boyhood fun and irresponsible. And who would then want to give that up? You know, people who feel like they have to, that they have no choice. But most guys are saying, I want to do this as long as I possibly can. Listen to your caller from Kate May, who said, mm-hmm. You know, he's a complete grown up. He pays his mortgage, he pays his bills. He's been in the military. He has a job. He just doesn't want to get married because he wants to party. You know, my feeling is that we have defined manhood for so long as adult, as responsible sobriety, kind of boring. That when you ask guys if they want to be that, as I did, you know, 400 of them, they said, no, not for a while. I got some time yet. Maybe by the time I'm in my mid-30s.
All right. Thanks very much for that call, Patrick. We appreciate it.
Okay, thanks.
We're talking with Michael Kimmel, a professor at State University of New York at Stony Brook, and with Kay Heimowitz about the subject of what it means to be a man today. And we're talking here on Talk of the Nation from NPR News. We have another caller on the line. This one is a woman, Chanel in Lake Tahoe, Nevada. How are you?
Hi, I'm great. Thanks for taking my call. I love NPR.
Great.
My comment was actually more or less a question. I'm 23 years old, and I'm constantly going out to concerts and, you know, going to social events and everything, and I feel like I'm always running into guys my age who are completely immature, and it's really frustrating for a woman my age who's got my own apartment, my own career, gone to college, and what my question is how do we find these guys our age that are men?
Okay, how does she find a good man?
I wish I could tell her. Look, there are a lot of good men out there. I mean, you know, we can overstate this problem, and many men who are interested in settling down and settling down early. But, you know, traditionally and conventionally, women have married men slightly older than they are. This may be part of the reason that men mature more slowly. Certainly boys mature more slowly than girls and women do. So, you know, look to the older men is one thing I would say. But I do think that part of what we're seeing is just really changed cultural expectations. And I would disagree with Michael on this. I don't see the young men that I'm talking to as just inheriting their father's and grandfather's idea of manhood or adulthood. On the contrary, I see them rejecting those ideas and really not wanting to be part of it. And I think that's what our caller here is noticing. These guys, you know, by the way, you know, most of them will, as Michael said before, grow up. Most of them are going to reach their 30s and they will settle down. But there is this playground that's available to them now. And it is very frustrating to a lot of women. And in part because men have more an open-ended capacity to reproduce, which women do not have. Women have in the back of their minds a sense of limits that men don't have.
Michael Kimmel, what do you think?
And I feel...
Nope, please, go ahead. Chanel, go ahead.
I feel that part of that frustration is also that, what if I don't want to be with an older guy? Because there is a sense of total appeal to the, you know, the free spirit, fun-loving younger guys who are my age who do want to have fun and want to have a blast, whereas the older guys are a little bit more focused on their career. And so it's like trying to find a happy medium of the let's have fun and be playful and youthful, but yet I don't want to have to date someone 10 years older than me. And also something I was really thinking about, which is a little bit off subject but still having to do with this, is how much does parenting have to do with the kind of man that he grows up into? Because I really believe that the men that I've met my age who are responsible and respectful have amazing parents. And I think that plays such a huge role, too.
Michael Kimmel, what do you make of that, the role of parenting in shaping today's young men?
Well, we know for sure that, you know, good parents make good kids, by and large, all things considered, all things being equal. And here's a really interesting, you know, dilemma for your caller. You know, there's a really wonderful new book out about young people in the same age demographic. But basically, the question that's posed to them is, what do you want your life to look like? What do you want to get married, have kids, et cetera? And the thing that's really interesting is both women and men of this age group all say they want to get married. They all say they want to have children, or not all, but I mean virtually all of them do. You know, it's still the expectation for most people in this age group. But the question then is posed to them, if you can't have that, what's your plan B, right? What if you can't have, you know, get married and balance work and family? If you can't have both career and family, what's your plan B? And for women, they say, I'll go it alone. If I can't have balance work and family, I'll have my kids. I'll be a single mother by choice, or you know, I'll adopt. I'll do something else but I want to maintain my commitment to my career. And you know what? The men's plan B is a traditional single breadwinner family, like their grandparents, perhaps. So it's not that they disagree on their what they want. It's that they disagree on what their fallback position is.
All right. Fascinating conversation, and we're going to have to leave it there. We've been speaking with Michael Kemmel and with Kay Heimowitz. Both have written extensively about this. Up next, we're going to change gears and talk about teachers. Stay with us. I'm Mary Louise Kelly. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News.